Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of this series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
Holy cow, look at this, hot off the press. I have in my greasy little hands.
Better not be a comic or you'll ruin the cover.
No, especially those shiny black ones. No, this is a missive from the Midwest Comic Book Association.
What?
Let's find out what's inside. Ooh, look at here. Hello,
there's
everyone.
Paper.
Wow, and hi. Super thanks to everyone involved with and participated in the 2014 MCBA Spring Con. We hired our largest crowd ever. A ton of new faces. Not us. And over 235 guest creators. New entertainments were very well received. Guest panels were packed, and because we weren't doing ours. And from all reports, a very fun and profitable time was had by all.
I didn't make any profit.
The MCBA is pleased to announce that the 2014 Fall Con Comic Book Party, the One Day Wonder, will take place on Saturday, October 4th, 2014, in the Education Building located on the Minnesota State Fairgrounds.
Do I have to wear pants?
Let's see. It's FallCon Education Building. Provide more space for everyone. No increase in number of dealers. 10 more guest creators than last year. 125 total. A few special events added. Comics don't orders. Oh, this is the invitation for retailers. So if you are going to be a retailer at the MCBA 2014 FallCon Comic Book Party, and you didn't get this in your greasy little hands, and believe me, having been a retailer, I know greasy little hands, you better get a quick note out to Nick and the boys at MidwestComicBook.com or send it to their email, mncba@aol.com, and tell them you need to get the retailer letter. Because, they're talking about all sorts of fun things, you know, FallCon supporting with Bleeding Edge, as well as traditional advertising and promotional campaign. And I think, Corey, you and I are part of the Bleeding Edge.
We are.
Yeah. Industry ads, blogs, podcasts, etc. So we're mentioned.
So, almost, yeah.
Anyways, it's out there. Again, details, Saturday, October 4th, 2014, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Minnesota State Fairgrounds Education Building. And there's going to be a 4 to 6 weeks response once you get your FallCon dealer application in. And, of course, first come, first serve. Dealer space is limited, so you got it here first. If you didn't get it, You better hurry up and put this podcast here on pause and send them a quick note that you wanna get the dealer letter. And I get this sent because it's two reasons. First of all, Nick knows
you were
they're out there. Well, yeah, and still a dealer. And you know, Pat and I were possibly toying with the idea of doing FallCon. I don't know if I'm going to be doing it. Speaking of which. Did we have any missives in our name my dig through my comic book collection type contest namey thingy?
Not yet.
I didn't think so.
But we do have sponsors.
We do?
Yep, these guys. Crazy Comics and Stories is brought to you by DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And you can save $20 on your first year of web hosting. Just use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and you get $20 off your first year of hosting. Graze.com is healthy snacks delivered right to your door. And if you use the code CORY-S3R5P, that's C-O-R-Y-S-3R5P, you get your first and fifth box free. Go to Graze.com to find out more. If you want to contact us at Crazy Comics and Stories, you can. You can either go to our Facebook fan page at Crazy Comics and Stuff. You can email us at corey.strode@gmail.com. Or you can call us at 952-856-0519. When you do that, we will read or play your comment on the air. If you want to advertise on Crazy Comics and Stories, you can. Just go ahead and email me at corey.strode@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. This is Brian Christman.
Shane Kelly.
Adam Murdo.
Matt.
Chris Everly.
Peter Rios.
And we're from the Comic Geek Speak podcast.
On May 2nd of this year, our friend and fellow podcaster, Jamie D'Alessandro, lost his battle with cancer.
In honor of Jamie, we are participating in a 5K and 10K race to raise money for the Livestrong Foundation, which provides support for people with cancer.
We will be taking part in the Team Livestrong Challenge, Philly, on Sunday, August 17th in Bluebell, Pennsylvania.
We are collectively running
and walking
under the team name of Jamie's Avengers.
If you'd like to join us in the event or make a donation to our team, go to livestrong.org and search for Jamie's Avengers.
Thank you all for your time and
Jamie's Avengers assemble!
Cool.
So, no, we don't have no
I didn't think
hold
so.
Of us yet.
Well, see, because I don't think anybody necessarily
Bunch
cares
savages.
What it's called. I think they just like the fact that we dig up old comic books and talk
good.
About them. Like what I found this weekend.
You found something?
I did, and this is almost kind of a mini Tales from the Shop.
Tales from the Shop?
Because this actually was a box of weird papers and stuff that dated from my original shop. As you know, last time I was on digging through the garage, I ran across a box of trading cards. And we talked about that a couple podcasts ago. And this week on eBay, I just put up some more variant covers. So if you're looking for some fun variants, a couple signed books, you might want to check them out. It could be fun. But what and again, my name there is Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. You know, and if you're looking for my buddy Pat, you know, my old – he's on there too. He won't do anything fun for you, like toss a little extra thing in for you. But he's under the label Khan, K-H-A-N hyphen 3153. And he's selling off bits and pieces of his collection because – I was talking with him the other day, and he's like, I may still have one more con in me. So he may be gearing up for Fall Con. So you might want to check that out. But as I was digging through, I ran across a couple of these cardboard mailers that Wizard used to use. When you had Wizard magazine, they always had the coupon in the middle. And it was always a rush to send them suckers in and get them back, because the first people who got them back could take their comic book they got and plastered up on the wall for megabucks for people that were just did not want to spend the $4 for the magazine and $4 more for shipping. They just as soon give you $15 and buy that issue off the wall. Now for a while, these here Wizard issues were so hot that Wizard limited you by how many you could actually order. So what you'd have to do is you'd have to get friends to fill out this here coupon, give them the money, and they would send them in for you. I don't know if I ever did that with you, Corey, if I had you do that.
Yes, you did.
But I found a couple from my old employee, Mike Griffith, and the comics, of course.
And now we've got his address.
His old address. I don't know if he's still there or not.
Now we could go to, we could travel back in time and stalk him.
There is that. Although if I travel back in time, I know you'll probably make friends with a high school age teen, Christina Hendricks, and convince her that you're the man for her.
Well, no, because I'd be a creepy 50-year-old guy hitting on a 16-year-old.
Well, I'm assuming the time travel would include some type of age component. Kind of like in Peggy Sue Got Married. You know, she went back in her old body, even though it was.
That was not a good time travel movie.
Well, it was there. And
You say that things have to be done in a rush. I play a Rush song, and you don't even acknowledge it.
I thought that was, see that.
And now people know why I don't do sound drops.
Do you know why I didn't? Because remember what I was complaining about last week? and I might have been off the air, but occasionally as I'm whipping through my podcast pages here and getting the pages up and stuff, a website will launch like an automatic ad, which is annoying. I mean, first of all, if it's a video, I can always hit pause, but sometimes it's an actual, audio ad that I cannot stop, and it's real annoying. So I just thought it was one of those in the background. So I'm flipping through all my pages trying to figure out which one it was. No, here behold, Corey's trying to be clever. That's what I get. But what I wanted to mention before we were podcasted here was the two envelopes, like I said, did not have the comic in them, but I pulled out the packing slip, which for some reason was remained inside there. Now, this dates all the way back to April 1994. And in one of them contained a hot copy of Prophet Number Zero.
Ooh.
A little backtracking for this, basically, and this is courtesy of Wikipedia for an odd reason I'll get to in a moment. If you recall, towards the end run, they started a new series of Moon Knight after a bunch of appearances of the character, Marvel 2-in-1, Defenders, Hulk magazine. So Moon Knight was hot. So they did an ongoing series starting in November 1990. Well, as we all know, towards the end of it, around 1994, and that was pretty good run for a series, they canceled the series with issue 60. But what was interesting was the last couple issues were drawn by, or last four of the last six issues were drawn by Stephen Platt. And these issues went ballistic. I mean, you're talking like $20 a piece because, again, these were – nobody was buying Moon Knight. And for issues – for reasons we've talked about in previous podcasts, the series was being canceled. Nobody cared. And all of a sudden, four issues come along that just go red-hot dynamite. Based on how hot that was, Stephen Platt was hired by Image Comics, and he went right – Moon Knight went on to a bunch of crappy miniseries up until what they're doing now, which I guess is doing pretty good. So anyways, Stephen – his first work for Image was a number four variant cover, which again – it's hard to believe nowadays, but this cover was super hot. I mean, silly hot. We're talking $25, $30 hot range. And you want to know how your investment held up? It goes for $1.98 now.
Woohoo!
I couldn't even sell one for 99 cents on eBay a while back. So anyways, they got, I think, Steven to do Prophet. And Prophet itself, if you care, was a gentleman, Jonathan Prophet. His father died over half a century ago, bringing the word of God to the people in Nazi Germany. With his father gone, Jonathan became responsible for his mother and younger brother. Needing money to support them, he allowed himself to be subjected to experiments conducted by scientists in the employ of the Nazis. Again, this was 1993. You could still get a good Nazi tale going. These experiments were part of a plan to create a superhuman. Wow, that's pretty original. Anyways, after these painful tests, he became Prophet. And if you want, I can read that again, or you could just go to Atomic Avenue and look it up. So Prophet number one, super hot, gave Mike the money he sent in. He got the book. He brought it in. He might have kept one for himself. Right now going for a blistering red hot, $2.50. The other one is so obscure, not even Atomic Avenue has information on it, but it's called Extreme Prejudice, number zero. And this is, again, an Image book, 1994, but I don't know if it was part of a, how would you say it, kind of like an introduction or part of a big crossover event. And it might have been a crossover event. I vaguely recall things like that. But that was a way how when Wizard was allocating these books to people that you could actually get a copy. You just – we bust open a bunch of wizards. We'd take the coupon out. We'd have our friends mail away for them. So suddenly a comic store would have about 10, 15 of these things. As Wizards' popularity, well, it kept going through the whole time I had my comic store. But the premiums they gave away kind of faded off. And they changed a bit. Some of them became the Wizard Ace editions, which you still had to mail away for. Sometimes they would have like a zero issue where you mail away for this zero issue, but I got a zero issue for having ordered 50 copies of Wizard. Or I think it was 25. So for every 25, I would get a special copy. I was selling anywhere between 60 to 80 issues of Wizard a month during when I had the big shop. So I'd get a couple of these promos. Usually it'd be like Dawn one half. And those were, that's what the issues were. They weren't the zero issues. They were the one half issues. So you would get the regular half issue. I would get the special Dawn one half gold logo foil cover. Oh, oh, oh. See how special I was. And of course you can go on eBay now and there's a few that held their interest. I mean, the Dawn issues tend to hover around 10, 20 bucks. Most of them are just fodder. But again, you can go and you'll see the regular edition, which you and I and mortals could have, and then the special retailer edition that only we could get. I mentioned about why I had to go to Wikipedia instead of Atomic Avenue to find out all my information about Moon Knight, the first series. Because for some reason, they have the final issue of Moon Knight was issue number 38. And I know that's wrong because Stephen Platt's issues were in the upper 50s and 60s.
You're looking at the wrong Moon Knight volume. First volume lasted 38 issues.
Okay.
Second volume lasted 6 issues. Third volume's the one that lasted 56 issues.
All right.
And that's off the top of my head
well,
there.
That's good because when I looked, they said the third issue only had 4. It was a miniseries from 1998.
Yep, that was they brought Doug Mensch. Doug Mensch came back, did a 4-issue miniseries, basically with his version of Moon Knight.
Okay.
Now we're going to rewind a little bit.
Now the
you mentioned
a comic has 4 issues again with Doug Mensch.
Yep.
So where am I going here?
You want the third volume for Stephen Platt?
No, they're saying the third volume is a 4-issue Doug Mensch.
Then maybe you want Mark Spector Moon Knight.
Aha! Uh-huh. There we go. Mark Spector Moon Knight. See, it's important to look at the Inca inside your comic book, because there it is. Yep, all 60 issues there, and Stephen Platt did...
So it did last for 60. Yep. I thought it was like 56.
No, he did 55, 56, 57, and then issue 60. And of course, the reason I picked up 55 and was able to cash it in for mega bucks, is because it had Spider-Man in it. And I tend to pick up a lot of Spider-Man issues. They're actually saying his early Platt issues have held up. They're saying the price guide says it's 26 bucks, 56 is 17. The 60 didn't hold up as well, but those 55, 56, 57, you know, they're saying still go for some money. I'm not impressed. I bet you could go to eBay and find them for less, but.
Well, a lot of the reason those early Stephen Platt issues are worth so much, nobody cared about Moon Knight at the time.
No, it was dying. And
he wasn't a hot artist yet. That was basically the book that made him a hot artist.
And,
no one knew who he was.
It was quite a departure. I mean, it was almost like from New Mutants to, was it, Fruits of First Cable where Rob Liefeld did. Was that 87?
It was 87 or 88.
Bill Stankiewicz went from the early Moon Knight to his run on Moon Knight. Or, New Mutants, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was such a change. And it drove the issue insane. Or even in Thor from Walt Simonson's first issue compared to the earlier issue. There is one where the artist change did not affect the back issue price, even though it was a radical change. And that was in Swamp Thing. Because when you, the first Swamp Thing or the second Swamp Thing series starts going hot, it's when Alan Moore writes Swamp Thing, even though, was it Steve Bissett did the issue number 19 before that? It wasn't hot until Alan Moore started writing it.
Yep.
So not all the time, but there you got a couple. If you're a Moon Knight completist and you're looking at those issues going, why the hell are those so expensive? Well, now you know, because as we always say, knowledge is power. With that said, I am going to go ahead and shred these invoices.
Now, can I give a little information on the series profit?
Oh, I know you can.
I didn't read any of the Rob Liefeld issues at all. Didn't care. Couldn't possibly care less. They revived it a couple of years ago, 2012. And issue 21 is the first of the new. And it's amazingly good. Mm. The first trade paperback, let's see, it was called Remission. The editors of Amazon listed it as the fifth best graphic novel of 2012. It is still going. It's up to issue, 42?
Interesting.
44. And it's a hard science fiction series. It's not selling real well, so get out there and buy it. But pick up that first trade, and you'll really enjoy it. You don't need to know anything at all about the book. And it just starts with him waking up in the far future.
So that would be – it's just called
issue
Profit?
21.
It's just called Profit, or did they
– Yep, just called Profit.
All right.
And it was one of the things where when it came back, it was like, I could not possibly care. Because they announced that some of the Liefeld books were going to be coming back. And it was, I could not possibly care. Could not possibly give less of a shit.
I wonder where they got the 21 from.
Because the 20th issue was the final issue by Image.
They must have done a rename because they're showing, like with Mark Spector, Moon Knight, because I'm on Atomic Avenue just checking prices, and they go zero to issue 10, and then it disappears and goes to issue 21. And it's that one showing price of anywhere from $10 to $13, depending on.
Yep. What it was, there were 11 issues,
mm-hmm.
if you count the zero issue.
Yeah.
Then there was a second series, lasted 8 issues. And then a one-shot by Awesome Comics, also by Liefeld, where he was trying to, I think, was it Awesome was the one that Diamond said, yeah, you owe us too much money, we're not carrying your books, and he tried to sell them through mail
that
order.
That was Maximum Press.
Okay, Maximum.
Which Torque Image
so,
guy.
All of those too. 20 issues.
Okay. So check. Okay, cool.
But really, I couldn't, you know, who cares? It's a Liefeld character.
They have 4 books to date. So you can get caught up from issue 1 all the way to issue 38.
But it was getting really good reviews on a bunch of podcasts. So I went out and I got the first volume of the trade and really enjoyed it. But that's not the big comic news this week.
No.
Everybody else has covered the big comic news this week, Joe.
Yeah.
We're late to the party on
it. Well, not really. We had it going next for last week, but
we didn't get to it. There are rumors that the head of Marvel, not him. Who's the guy who's in charge of Marvel? The corporate weasel.
I don't know anymore. I thought
Perlmutter.
I thought it was the movie guy, Ari Arvid, but
no, it's the guy above him.
Yeah, I don't know because I don't really pay attention.
Well, anyway, the rumor is that he is very mad about the contract Fox has with Marvel, because what it was when Marvel sold the rights to the X-Men and the Fantastic Four to Fox, they were in bankruptcy. So they didn't get a whole lot for the rights. And it basically Marvel has to pay Fox for the toys they sell. because Fox says, well, you know, nobody would buy these toys if it weren't for the movie. Now Marvel's a big corporate juggernaut. They're part of Disney. And this is all rumor. The head of Marvel at the corporate level is mad about this contract, mad about the Fantastic Four. The comic isn't selling the best in the world. So because of these things, there will not be Fantastic Four movie toys when the movie comes out. And the Fantastic Four comic will be canceled, and the characters will not be appearing anywhere. And Marvel is saying the cool thing about Marvel is, you know, this rumor has shown up, and Tom Brevoort has said Marvel will continue to publish Fantastic Four comics.
Maybe they won't name them Fantastic Four. Maybe they'll actually.
Well, you notice he didn't not say they're canceling.
Maybe they'll suck in a another person and call it Fantastic Foundation or FF, or maybe let Spider-Man in and call it Fantastic Five so they don't have to pay him, because sorry boys, this isn't a Fantastic Four comic, it's a Spider-Man comic.
Well, yeah, here's my,
I should be a corporate shill.
Here's my take on it. I'm looking at the sales on Fantastic Four and they're not great. So I imagine if somebody in one of the corporate retreats said, hey, remember when the Human Torch died and that sold really well? Let's do a story where the Fantastic Four break up. And it's not just they break up and they get back together the next issue like Stan always did, but they break up and he lays out a storyline for it to, you know, weave through stuff and be part of an event and et cetera, et cetera. And Marvel says, cool, go with it. Kind of like how Captain America died, was replaced by Bucky, came back right as the movie came out with the new number one. Spider-Man, replaced by Dr. Octopus, he's now the superior Spider-Man, comes back right as the movie comes out. I could see them doing that. And if the story's good, cool. Death of Captain America was a cool story. Superior Spider-Man was a cool story. If it's a cool story, I don't care what they do.
That's kind of distressing, because I actually... It was one of the books I got caught up over the last week for reading, as I read FF 1 through 5, and I'm actually getting drawn into it. And at first I was kind of cold to it, but then I thought, you know, let's wait, get all five in a row and read it. And I've actually had some fun with it.
Now, here's my question, Joe. Let's say Marvel does this. Fantastic Four has not been a barn burner in sales. Let's say they make the Fantastic Four goes away for a while. They let the property rest. And this isn't the first time Marvel's done something like that. Recently, Thor. We were without a Thor book for quite a while. And they waited till they got the right pitch and brought him back. There are some other examples of characters they've done this with. With some of them, the book was canceled and they brought it back. Some of it, it's just, no, you know, like the Legion of Superheroes. Most of the people at DC say, you know what, we've rebooted it so many times, it's kind of toxic. We need to let it rest for a while, and then we'll bring it back. Doctor Strange was another one. The book wasn't selling well. They let it rest for a while. The problem is, every time they try to bring it back, the sales don't do well, and it goes away again. Joe is a retailer. I know when Superman went away for a while and came back, it made a lot of money, but boy, you had a lot of Adventures of Superman number 500 sitting on the shelves.
No, they weren't so much sitting, they were festering.
Do you think at a retail level this works, to kind of let something sit for a while to build up demand? Or, like, I'll use Sandman for an example. You know, Sandman ended. And every so often, Neil Gaiman comes back and he does another Sandman story. And it seems like they do better each time. But again, I'll use Doctor Strange. Every time they bring him back, it does worse and worse and worse because out of sight, out of mind. As a retailer, when a character would get canceled and go away for a while, when they came back, how would you gauge how you would order it?
I think a lot of times I had one advantage at the big shop and even the little shop, that a lot of newer comic stores might not have. I had a lot of people pre-ordering comics. And so you talk like out of we're talking like the heady days of Death of Superman, the Rise of Image, the breaking of Batman's back, the appearance of Desmond. God, I knew I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
He's gonna puke. He's gonna puke. Oh,
excuse me. Okay, I'm better. So you're talking 300 subscribers, 100 were probably just for the Superman thing, and they disappeared as soon as Superman came back. Out of those, I had anywhere between 75 to 100 people who used previews every month, which is a pretty decent number. So after I do the preview orders, I would have a number one. Now, it's a DC Marvel. It was usually pretty easy because that would give me an idea. All of a sudden, I had, 50 people ordering number one. Okay, there's some heat to this one. Let's order it. Let me preface this also by the fact that there were no variant covers. There was no reason for me to round up to 10, to 25, to 100, to 200 to get the rare ultimate variant covers because they just simply didn't exist. Nowadays, you look in the Diamond catalog and it says, ask your retailer for the variant. And they're always, for every 10, 20, 25 you order, you get, you can buy one variant cover. And a lot of those end up worth nothing on eBay. Those are the ones I'm doing the 99-cent variant covers with. You start getting into the 50, 100, 150, 200 range where it's a rare super sketch cover by Alex Ross. Those are the, or like the Amazing Spider-Man, what issue did they end on? 300? Or with, or was it, no, 400, where they, when they went to Superior Spider-Man. There was a finally printed, unused cover that, Steve Ditko had done. A 1 in 250 comic book variant, still going for $500 to $1,000. But you had to order 500 or 250, whatever it was, an insane number of comics to get just one of those. None of that.
It ended with issue 700.
700, thank you. The point being, none of that existed. So I had no incentive to take a number one and pump it up beyond what I thought. Depending on what it is. Now, okay, X-Men character. Let's see. My X-Men numbers were usually about 120 people. And even when it dropped, they only went to about 100. So figure if I had 50 people order it, I could probably do 70, maybe 80. If it was a character like Wolverine. Oh, Wolverine was a non-thinker. Just order 100 extra. If it was a character like the Incredible Multiplex Man, maybe 10, maybe 20 more over. Because you're thinking in terms of the family, If it was a Spider-Man book, okay, if I have 75 regular Amazing Spider-Man readers, and at the time Web of Spider-Man I think was the worst selling, which was maybe down in the 40s. Is this book got enough people to get that interest up? Can I sell an extra 30 copies that I'll put on the shelf? Will those people who buy Amazing Spider-Man care, and pick up it? Or am I just hoping, well, it's a Marvel number one, it'll sell eventually. DC was even more acute because they could pull people out of nowhere. I'm pretty sure had I been around for Sandman 1 that I probably would not have ordered many for the shelf. And it was by sheer luck that I had a Sandman 1 in my own collection because I really didn't become aware of Sandman until they were doing the Seasons of the Mist storyline. And then I picked it up and it was like, wow, this is pretty good. And I was able to go all the way back and pick up the other ones at back issue prices, but, the hot one, of course, was number, was it one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, or eight. First appearance of Death. That everybody.
Yep, number eight.
That everybody was really hot over. And then there was even a couple unintentional variants. One had like a special retailer hello copy cover. I don't know. I'm not gonna bother looking it up. But there were just weird variants like that. But they weren't planned variants like today. They were just accidental variants. So again, the character, I'd be more willing to order more if it was an established character versus somebody who didn't have any heat, just out of nowhere. Hey, here's Rom, number one.
Woohoo!
Rocket Raccoon was an interesting one because he appeared in Hulk, got a little heat, got a little press, and so now it's like, we're doing a Rocket Raccoon miniseries. Okay, I might order a little bit more. For me, the biggest problem was mostly just trying to get people interested. I think Marvel Age was out. DC had a newsletter. I had a huge grease pencil board I called Wonder Board where I would put up on there and say, hey, remember Rocket Raccoon from Hulk? He's going to have his own four-issue miniseries. Let me know if you're interested and try to catch your attention that way. I tried to do newsletters, which took a lot of time. When email was taking off towards the end of the 90s, it was a lot easier with email because I could do a big email newsletter and put all these blurbs in there and gets people's attention real fast. A big one, like there was a JLA where, was it Mark Waid or Grant Morrison had, Daniel from Sandman appear in a couple issues. Must have been Morrison. And
yeah.
So I told, hey, did you ever read Sandman? You really, really want to check these two issues out. Or if you're interested in what happened to Daniel. So you try to get people's attention that way because there was no Sandman, but here's like an out of Vertigo clutches appearance of Sandman, you know, and those two issues sold really well just for the people that wanted those two issues. Again, there were a lot of different things. You know, I think it depends on the character. Pre-orders for me were big because again, I mentioned that's how I found out about She. Suddenly I had 20 people out of the blue ordering She, a book that the solicitation went right over my head. Okay, 20 people ordered it. I'll order 20 more. At worst happens, I break even. She went ballistic. If it naturally rolls out of something, and I think we'll probably be talking about that a little bit later. For example, a couple of the books that I'm gamed on are Magneto and Cyclops because they rolled naturally out of the X-Men storyline. I might have even at the small shop gone as far as, you know what? I pulled this issue for you so you can try it. If you don't like it, put it back on the shelf. You know, cause back then I think I only had 50 subscribers. It wasn't so tough. And being that I wasn't open as a full-time comic store, it was a lot easier to do it that way than try to, you know, catch up the other way. You know, like, oh, you missed Magneto 1-3? You know, it's sold out. I could probably catch a second print or maybe wait for the book, you know, which a second print, you say that to a collector. I mean, that's like, you know, spit.
By the way, I use this comic to wipe my behind with. Would you like it?
No worries. It has a second print. The ink doesn't smear as bad.
You want a second print? Why? Why do you insult me? Me, I never minded a second print. And here's the thing that always bugged me because collectors wanted the stuff that's rare, right? Second prints, usually much fewer than first prints.
And sometimes the covers were cooler because DC for a while, well, Marvel at first, they'd make the second print a gold cover.
God.
And they were never solicited. They were only solicited to the retailer. So it was coming.
Gold, good.
Gold mutant. Never, yeah. DC for a while would do second print as a sketch cover of the original one, which I thought was cooler because I liked the sketch cover much more than the original. And now they just call it variant edition second print. So it's a true variant cover. What's old is new again.
Everything right is wrong again. Wait, that's not the same.
No, that's not the same.
Ah, well.
It'd be interesting to see how Nick, if I ever corner him, I'll have to ask him. I said, how do you order? I suspect I know the answer. I don't know how Nick orders at the source, but again, I don't think it really matters because they are in a juggernaut class in terms of buying power. Doesn't really, I mean, and I was that way with Hot Comics in the beginning. It didn't matter how many spawns I ordered. They would sell, or if they didn't sell, something else would sell. So I could take it. I mean, for a while, I took a chance on all sorts of small press and indies and things, because if I didn't sell it, it would sell eventually or disappear in a back issue. It didn't matter. You know, towards the end of the 90s, as the comics started to contract, we tried to keep tighter order on it. And what's the point of putting 10 issues of The Amazing Night Moon on the shelf if I didn't sell 10? If worse, I suddenly ended up with 15, meaning five people put them back, and nobody took it off their pull list.
Makes you mad.
Makes me mad.
Okay, now I've talked to editors, you know, at conventions, and one of the things that they talk about is if a book gets canceled and they're going to bring a character back, unless it's part of a story, they don't want to bring it back the same as it was before. Because, well, why would we want to do exactly what we did before that got canceled? There weren't enough people buying it. It's like whenever they bring back the New Warriors, everybody wants the New Warriors to be just like it was back in the 90s. But if you did, it's, well, you know, back in the 90s, by the end, that book wasn't selling real well. Why would we want to bring back something that failed? So they try something new. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The best example, well, is the X-Men, of course, because it was one of Marvel's lower-selling books. It was one of the first of the early Marvel books that got canceled. And, you know, they kept doing reprints of it, but when they brought it back, it was very, very different. And the idea was that Roy Thomas pitched was, well, let's have an international team so that we've got a book to do better in the international market because the characters are based, you know, we got an Irish person, we got a Japanese person, we got a Canadian person, we got a... So, Joe, when you, as a reader, see that a book is coming back, does it bother you if they change it a lot, or do you think, oh, well, that could be interesting?
That actually is kind of this, a second thing I would look at, both as a reader and as a retailer. Who's doing it? You know, again, there are so many X books out there. Unless Bendis is doing it, I tend to ignore it. Because there's way too much. That's how I missed out on Magneto and Cyclops, like I was talking about. The latest Moon Knight came out. I don't even know who's doing it.
Warren Ellis.
I do have.
So he's only doing the first six issues.
Yeah, and I think I have the first one. I haven't read it yet, so I don't know if I'm going to go crazy picking up the other ones. And of course, there's things like you said. Oh, Warren Ellis. Big name, get a lot of heat on it. I mean, I read Trees, enjoyed it immensely. If you were a Warren Ellis fan, I would probably really push this one on you. Plus, it's only $2.99. If I knew he was only doing the first six issues, well, he's doing it. That's something.
Yeah, they didn't announce he was just doing the first six issues till last week.
You know, there's a series called God is Dead. I think Avatar publishes it.
Yes.
But John Hickman did like the first six or seven issues, and then it's Jonathan Hickman's God is Dead, and he didn't do them.
Yeah.
And now there's another one coming up where I see there's a bunch of people doing it. Alan Moore's name is one of them. So I'm kind of like, is this a one-shot, or what's going on here? You know? So that type of stuff gets – as a reader, it can just discourage me. I'm almost to the point where, like, you know, I don't care. I'm going somewhere else. On the other hand, if it's somebody that's going to stick with it, it can be exciting. on other hands, it could be just like what you said with Profit, you know. Profit, that sucked. I'm not picking it up. And then you suddenly realize, you know, by the time it gets to issue 38, holy cow, this is hot.
Yeah. See, that's one of the things about when they do a reboot. I think it's kind of weird that they picked Profit to do this with, because the people who read Profit probably aren't in reading comics anymore.
Probably not.
You know, it was part of the big 90s boom. It was very, very Liefeld. And it only lasted, what, 11 issues, with one of them being a zero issue. So why bring that character back other than the fact that, well, Rob wants to protect his copyright? But to do something so radically different, I think it took a while for it to get traction. I think you do need to do something different because, you know, the book was canceled. But if you do something really radically different, the people who are tempted to pick it up and try it would go, well, this is a different character, and they'll put it aside. Moon Knight, great example. How many times have they brought Moon Knight back? And I loved Bendis's Moon Knight. I thought that was a great run of a comic, but it didn't sell well enough. Now Warren Ellis has come in, kind of done a soft reboot of the character. And after six issues, he's going to hand it off. So it's good enough that it intrigues me, that I'm still reading it. And I don't feel like, well, this is a completely new character. But it's different enough that it has a chance. Like when the Legion of Superheroes comes back, which it will, even if it's, you know, 5 years from now, eventually they're going to bring the Legion of Superheroes back. How much are they going to change it?
Mm.
You know, you got to keep the core concept, and the core concept is superheroes in the 30th century. But do you keep all the characters to keep all the old fans happy? Do you do a complete utter reboot where you just start with the three main characters and then move forward? How do you handle it? And I imagine that the editorial at DC is getting pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch for the Legion of Superheroes. Kind of like at Marvel, Joe Quesada said when he came in as editor-in-chief, the character he got the most pitches for, everybody at Marvel wanted to write Doctor Strange, and everybody gave him a pitch. All of them. I imagine if the rumor's true and the Fantastic Four is going away for a while and it's not part of a story, I imagine the day the final issue ships, Axel Alonso, who's current editor-in-chief of Marvel, will have 10 pitches to bring back the Fantastic Four on his desk when he walks into the office that Monday morning. Because that's just, it seems to be that's how it is.
And of course, as I've said before, if you really want to read a decent Doctor Strange story, let's give it to the Mighty God King, who's got a blog where he talks two things. If I were writing Doctor Strange, and if I were writing the Legion of Superheroes. And he talks about different storylines he would write, but he writes them in a way to get you interested in the story. He doesn't give away the ending because he wants to write Doctor Strange and Legion of Superheroes. And if you don't, after going to his blog site and check out his run of what he thinks of Legion. I mean, he gets it. He knows Legion. He knows Doctor Strange. Even to these days when I mentally run through my brain, well, here's how I'd write Doctor Strange. I find myself coming up with concepts he is using or that he wrote that I just thought were brilliant. And like I say, he doesn't give away the ending of it. So if he ever does get to write any of these, but I'm not in charge of Marvel, so it won't happen. Or DC. Heck, I'm not even in charge of this here podcast.
No, you're not. I am, and you know what that means.
Uh-oh.
It's time for Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking about? What's bothering you? What's driving you up a wall? What's making you chew nails and spit metal?
Oh, I was sick last week. I hate being sick. I mean, I was sick where I wasn't. Usually what I try to do is if I'm off a day I didn't plan, try to get some things on eBay, but I couldn't even get my ass up to do that.
It is at this point in the show that Joe went on a long rant about work, Congress, lizard people, John Byrne, Jim Shooter, Batman, Superman. Captain Caveman for some reason, and how he was never allowed to drive the Mystery Mobile. I have edited this because it goes on for over an hour and a half, and while I was able to go make supper, eat supper, watch an episode of Raw, I didn't want to subject you people to that. Joel will be back with his freaking next week, and hopefully it'll be a little more coherent and less legally actionable.
No wonder I'm sick. Corey, what are you freaking on?
Nothing quite as serious as that.
Well, you know, I don't go off about my job too often, but...
Joe, if a movie made $700 billion in a month, what would you say that movie is?
Well, it depends. Was it Matthew Broderick's Godzilla or Amazing Spider-Man 2? Then it would be a flop.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 has made $700 billion. I'm sorry, million. $700
Flop.
Million. Dollars. Flop. 7/10 of a billion.
Flop.
But if you go to the comic news sites.
Flop.
Oh, it was a major disappointment for Sony.
Flop.
A huge disappointment for Sony.
Yep.
A flop, one of them said.
Sony's John Carter, Warlord of Mars.
Yeah. People ask me, people I know who are comic fans, say, oh, did you read this on Comic Book Resources? Did you read this on Newsarama? Did you read this? No, I don't read any of them. You know why? Because they had a huge, all of them had a headline. Amazing Spider-Man 2, disappointment, flop, failure. I wish I could have a $700 million failure. What is it about the comics industry that we can't get decent news reporting anymore? It's either fanboy wankage of, I didn't like Amazing Spider-Man 2, so every article I write about it will be how it was a massive failure. Or, hey, Marvel gave me a press release. Why don't I just run the press release and they'll like me? I have been asked a few times why Joe and I don't cover current comics news. It's because I don't have time to be a journalist. And if I went to the comics news sites.
They don't either.
It would be like watching Fox News while drunk. It's not news. It's press releases and fanboy wankery. There's a reason I don't watch cable news anymore. It's not news. Do you want to know what's going on in Rio de Janeiro? How they're very concerned about what's going on with the World Cup and we may have to move the Olympics? Well, don't think you're going to find out about it on cable news because Obama was chewing gum. Back in the 80s and 90s, I read the Comics Journal. And people pissed and moaned and bitched about the Comics Journal. They said that Gary Groth and Kim Thompson hated comics. Why are they publishing a comic book magazine if they hate comics? Well, first off, they don't hate comics. They just got bored with the mainstream stuff. They were like the kids in high school who discovered REM before everybody else. And because you were still listening to Journey and Phil Collins, they made fun of you. Then when you started listening to REM, they're like, REM's no good. They sold out. But besides that, their news section was researched. They had reporters. They dug into stories. They called people. They chased down stories. No one does that anymore. They just take the press release like a baby bird having a worm put into its mouth and throw it up for you.
I will qualify
and
DC's, that.
DC's even scared to do that. DC had a thing at Comic Book Resources where they would answer fan questions. Oh, they didn't like the fan questions, so we're discontinuing this.
I will say one thing against the Comics Journal, and this is courtesy of Gauntlet Magazine. When Gary Groth decided to go against Harlan Ellison, they basically came to the conclusion, this is Gauntlet, that being that Gary had the magazine, his coverage of everything Ellison was skewed.
Oh, yeah. But it's the old rule. You don't start a fight with someone who buys ink by the barrel.
Covering the news? No, in this case, you weren't. You were just using Comics Journal as your bully pulpit.
Right.
And again, if you want to read that, go find the Gauntlet. Gauntlet was a magazine that I haven't seen published in years. I covered First Amendment issues. Pretty hardcore. I mean, you're talking, they covered guys who talked about Scientology. They covered right and wrong. And in this case, they covered Groth versus Ellison. And Ellison didn't comment at all. He said, you know, I've got nothing more to say about this issue. And, well, they dug in. So, again, I will agree with Corey with the one caveat. Caviar?
Oh, yeah.
I like caviar. Yeah. You know, I mean, there were times I loved reading Comics Journal because they'd be like, well, what happened to Triumph Comics, or what happened to some of these other hot comic companies that flared for like 4 months and then disappeared suddenly? Because you never knew when a comic company went out of business. And some of the other players in the game, not Wizard definitely, CBG tended to be more press release, more on the upside of things. But Comics Journal would get in and say, hey, here's why this company went out of business. Here's what we found out. And sometimes that's all you knew, other than the fact they just stopped appearing in previews.
Well, one of the things that I liked was the whole distributor collapse of 85, 86. Buyer's Guide, which was, you know, the weekly newspaper of the comics industry, didn't cover it. They had an industry magazine. I forget what it was called, but you got it free in your shop.
Comic Retailer. Retailer.
And they didn't cover it. It was the journal that got their hands on the contracts. It was the journal that went into the Heroes World mess and why Heroes World was such a nightmare. You and I went to the final Cap Cities conference. There were guys from the journal there, and they were, you know, there were times when they were talking to a publisher, you know, one of the smaller publishers, and they were sitting down, and they had, you know, it was before computers and MP3s and everything, so they were writing everything longhand and recording it with tapes.
Mm-hmm.
They did the work. Nobody does the work anymore. I will say that ICV2.com, which is internal correspondence version 2, they do some coverage, but it's very much toward retailers, and it's more about what's selling, what's not, what's coming, what's not. They know their end of the business, but if you want to know what's going on with why is this book not coming out, or what happened to this that was announced, or what's the financial stuff going on behind the scenes, you're not going to get it anywhere because nobody's going to dig into it at all. Because, well, that would take work. And there's one thing I've learned over the last 5 years, Joe. If a cable company, if a newspaper, if a website can figure out how to get money out of you or get viewers without doing any work, they're going to do it. Geeking. What are you geeking on? What are you loving? What's got you excited?
Well, I got one more freaking that I wasn't sure I wanted to mention.
Okay.
Well, my Women's Prison Massacre DVD.
Yes.
Is not the unrated one. So I'm kind of upset about that. It's only rated R. So that may end up in somebody's package if they buy something off my eBay site. But geeking, I have a lot of fun things. I went up and visited a comic book store this week. One I hadn't been to in a while. And it's Granite City in St. Cloud, Minnesota. A friend of mine's up there from the NDO, working there because they couldn't hire enough women up there. Apparently St. Cloud needs women, so send you women. While she was up there, I went up to visit her, have lunch, went to Pizza Ranch, which wasn't as exciting as it sounded. although it was a pretty good deal. So afterwards, there's another girl up there who actually is from my airport, and she had mentioned that in order to save taxpayers a little dollars, her mom drove her up there. But then she wanted to get back to the city to get her car. So then she would have a car to use around. I think I've talked in the past about how they're limited with their rental car by what they can do. The other reason she wanted a car, because they wanted to fly her from Minneapolis to Chicago, Chicago to St. Cloud. St. Cloud's only 50 miles away from the Twin Cities, but there are no direct flights here to there. As opposed to direct flights from Minneapolis to Rochester, Minnesota, which has a direct flight, but Rochester has one thing St. Cloud doesn't, called the Mayo Clinic. So they can have all these rich Saudis come in, land their 747s in Minneapolis, catch a little charter jet to Rochester. So anyways, I told her, if you want to ride back, because I'm heading back to the cities, I'd give you a ride. And they said, sure. I said, however, we are going to stop at Granite City. And maybe I'll save this next week about how I know these guys, because it's almost its own miniature Tales from the Shop.
Hey!
But they've moved their store, I'm not sure why, to a couple blocks away, in a little bit closer into the downtown of St. Cloud, next to a couple neat restaurants. One's at my friends had already been to, and I said, how could you not notice the big Batman poster next door? We weren't looking for that. I said, oh, come on, I'm disappointed. So we went in, and the store's a lot. It's almost like they picked it up and just moved it to where they are now. Again, nicer location. They have a great display. Tim, Dave, and Nate have a decent display of old Golden Age issues all the way to the newer hot variants. They have gaming stuff. Can spruce up their graphic novels a little bit more. But again, they know their business. They've been around, much like my story. They bought the shop, and they've been running it nonstop ever since. I don't know how big a town St. Cloud is, but essentially they are the only comic store, game store there. Because I didn't have my list with me, I was a little hesitant to figure out to buy anything. But I did find a couple books that were kind of interesting. One was called Explorer Joe. And this is, hang on a second here. Pregnant pause here. My computer froze.
Oh, no.
Stupid computer. I had these all loaded.
IOTA,
and I didn't. Let's see if I can get this up again. Oh, no, maybe I won't. Okay. Anyways, Explorer Joe, I guess I'm just going to open this book here. This has a 10-cent cover price, folks. So we're talking, this is Golden Age stuff. It's from the Ziff Davis Comic Group, dated from 1952. Approved Comics Incorporated. And it looks like, for the most part, no credits.
Believe it or not, Ziff Davis is still around.
Ooh.
They don't publish comics anymore. They got out of that when the distribution collapse of 55, 56. But they still exist.
This looks like Joe going up against commies and fighting the devil, a monk would be. So I picked up that Explorer Joe number 2, and then I picked up another one, which I've got to carefully open up. There we go. And let's see. Let me open this one. Whoops. Ah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's okay. It wasn't meant to begin with. This one is called Judo
Extra
Joe.
Extra damaged.
Judo Joe. Kids, a complete judo lesson in each issue. This dates 1953, published by the JJ Corp out of St. Louis. And the first page says there, hi there, I'm Joe Smith, a sophomore at Mid-City High. Most everyone calls me Judo Joe because I learned all about this wonderful art of self-defense during my childhood in Japan, and it has an origin story. No credits, but kind of interesting. I figure, oh, here we go. Judo Joe in the championship bout from the Daily Blade. Judo Joe faces Jap Champ in judo box. you gotta love political correctness. Every issue of Judo Joe contains a complete judo lesson. So next time,
it's not racist if we said it 50 years ago.
Next time I see you, Corey, we might be having a judo contest because I'll know judo from Judo Joe. Interesting thing about
you can protect me from attackers.
Yeah,
there could be attackers anywhere. You know,
it could happen. Interesting thing about this: both these have logos from Twin City Comics. So. Apparently, in part of the close, they took these issues back. And I just picked them up because, like I said, out of all the graphic novels, out of all the series I saw, I couldn't find anything, you know. And I thought, oh, what the heck, I'll pick up a couple Joe comics.
Just think, if you would have learned judo before the Watcher was shot, you could have saved him.
I don't know. I kind of like my glow-in-the-dark eye, even though it keeps staring at me. I did stop by the Source Comics and Game, as I'm wont to do, and picked up a couple things. Again, I picked up Loki.
You put them down when you were done?
No, I actually took them. Well, bought
them. Did you pay for them?
Well, yes. I like Source. I want them to stay around for a long, long time. So I picked up Loki Agents of Asgard number 3, the second print variant, because for some reason I never got issue 3. I went through a long time figuring out I missed the third issue. I couldn't remember if it was She-Hulk, Black Widow, or Loki. And then I finally figured out as I got all my comics in order, it was Loki. Because I love photo covers and I'm dying to see the movie, I picked up the Guardians of the Galaxy Prelude, issues 1 and issue 2. Issue 1 has... I'm assuming... Hooked on a feeling. I'm assuming this must be Nebulous because it's a bald chick.
No, that's Moondragon.
No, I think it's
okay.
I think it is Nebulous. It's played by Carrie, what's her name from Doctor Who? Karen.
Oh, Kieran Gillen.
Yeah.
Yes, that is Nebula.
So, and she looks hot. And then the second issue has Groot with a Rocket Raccoon on his shoulder, firing a very large gun. So I'll probably talk about that next week. And again, the fun things about these is it ties into the movie continuity and it takes place before the movie. So I'm already jazzed. I don't know if you talked about these, Corey, or if somebody talked about these online. Somebody poo-pooed these online. I thought this was, IDW is doing a photo novels that John Byrne is putting together.
Yeah, I've read them, and yay, John Byrne can use Photoshop. I would have liked it better if he would have drawn them.
Well, I took a look.
Because then they wouldn't have been $8 a pop.
Yeah, I took a look at these, and the few pages I read, I actually enjoyed. So I picked them both up. IDW's got two out. The first one was annual 2013. New Visions, Strange New Worlds, and it's got Gary Mitchell on it. And again, they're taking photos from the original series or, like you said, photoshopping in different things. And it looked interesting enough. And talking to Chad at the Source, he said IDW said it sold well enough where they're going to do a few more of them here and there.
Yep, their third one is solicited in the most recent previews.
Yeah, and I picked up the last one. The Mirror Cracked, which obviously has something to do with the Mirror Universe because there's that evil Mr. Spock with a goatee. Because you can always tell when somebody's evil if they're wearing a goatee.
Uh-oh.
And, of course, you had a Lieutenant Uhura with a very – oh, wow, did she have a hell of a waistline. So I got those. I'm going to read them. I'll probably geek about them next week. Oh, and you know what? I think I just broke my own rule because this next item I picked up at Target – it's a limited edition collectible, the Steel Case Steve Austin 4 Movie Collection. For $10, I've got Steve Austin in The Stranger, Hunt to Kill, The Package, which also has Dolph Lundgren in it, and Maximum Conviction when he was there with Steven Seagal. And I do not believe I own any of these. I know I have a couple of Steve Austin DVDs, and I don't know if these were movie releases or just direct to DVDs. Don't much care, but for $10, I got a nice metal package, limited edition. And now I'll have at least 8 hours, if not more, of some Steve Austin rated R fun.
Now you got to watch him. No good, some bitch.
Yeah, you know, I'm.
Meet him out, some bitch.
Like I said, I haven't watched my Women's Prison Massacre. I haven't watched my Star Blazer 2199.
If you think Joe's being a lazy slacker, give me a hell yeah.
Well, the crickets are awake.
Well, there we go.
Anyways, a couple other quick things personally, as if my freaking wasn't personal enough. I'm very proud of the latest snake handler in our family. Holly is following in the footsteps of Dana, volunteering at our local zoo, Como Zoo. If you're ever up in the Minnesota, St. Paul, Minneapolis area, Como Zoo is one of the largest, if not the largest, well, actually second largest, and one of only two totally free zoos that you can visit. You don't have to pay a single dime to get in, although they do have a big clear box at the beginning of this thing that gives you a suggested contribution, but you don't have to, even though the person there will probably look at you funny. She's part of the Nature Walk program where they take non-lethal animals. Why non-lethal? I think it takes some of the fun out of it. And she was holding, I believe, one of the boa constrictors. And then, of course, their number one question as the kids come by and look with their wide eyes as the snake is moving around, can I touch it? Well, the thing is, snakes don't like to be touched. So the answer is no. But Holly can. Well, she's more or less holding it. I have to say, I didn't quite appreciate some of the places the snake was poking around on her. But, you know, you just can't trust a snake. No good snake. And Dana put a really nice picture on my Facebook page of when she was doing it, handling the boa constrictor, and when Holly was doing it. So that was kind of cool. I'm kind of proud of her on that one. And yesterday I had a short-lived bout with a group, if I may be so bold as to quote one of our favorite movies, Star Wars. I played my aunts in a game of Mutant Yahtzee. And my aunts and my mom play Yahtzee. You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. Mutant Yahtzee. Now, you've all seen a Yahtzee sheet. And if not, go to Toys R Us and buy one. Look at the sheet and return it. But it's like five games or six games across. So one sheet you can use for six games. They play a single game. You fill the entire sheet. And usually this takes an hour or two. What I've since learned is that some of my aunts are very militant. One of them is if you slow down and actually count your dice, she already knows instantly. Take them as your fours, 16. Take them as your four of a kind, 27. You know, she just has it added up because she wants the game to keep moving. And if you slow down, she'll wrap your knuckles with her pencil. The other aunt cheats. Well, she doesn't really cheat. She taunts you. She doesn't take her Yahtzees because she gets so damn many of them. She just takes them down as three or four of a kind. Just to rub it in. I don't need to take this Yahtzee. I'll just take it as my four of a kind. Because I know later I'm going to get my Yahtzees in ones. I'm telling you, I'm going to film this for YouTube, and it's Mutant Yahtzee. It's crazy. Now, on top of that, I lost 60 cents. That sounded more like a freaking than a geeking. Corey, what are you geeking on? What's got you going? What's got you revved up? What can we close this here podcast on a positive note with?
Well, the first of the EC podcasts dropped last week. Ooh, I'm talking like one of the young people.
You're so hip.
And got great, great feedback.
Nice.
EC itself retweeted us.
Oh, cool.
And featured us on their Facebook page.
Cool. I actually
on their MySpace page. Who knows?
I actually dropped our name on Free Comic Book Day on Facebook. Was asking about if anybody blogs about comic books, mostly reviewing. And I said, well, we do that sometimes on our podcast.
Well, there you go. But I'm gearing up for the next episode, and as part of it, I am rereading my Tales from the Crypt.
Mm. The classic
Russ Cochran,
the big classic one,
hardcover. Oh, oh yeah, because I want the historical information, and well, the colored version is what saw print. The Cochran version is shot from the original art. So one of the things Marie Severin, who was the colorist at the time, would do, if there was a panel she thought was too violent, she would kind of block it by like putting a dark blue color.
She didn't quite understand the concept of EC Comics, did she?
No, Gaines was actually happy because there were times the artist went a little too far and she reeled it back a bit. So she understood it really well in that she didn't want them to, she didn't want the cops showing up, knocking on the door, arresting people. But I'm getting to go back and read all my ECs. So I read the first volume of Tales from the Crypt, the first five issues. And while it took a little while for them to find their footing, I love these comics so much. I'll talk more about it in that podcast, but the art, by three issues in, you've got Al Feldstein, Wally Wood, Harvey Kurtzman, Jack Davis, Graham Ingalls, Jack Kamen, and Johnny Craig, all drawing these wonderful stories. And the art is just beautiful. It's just beautiful, beautiful art. So I'm getting to do that and also reading, because I haven't read these books in quite a while. Because it's all, you know, I got the annuals and I read those because they're easier to get to and everything. But just, it's a beautiful presentation, some really great stories. I'm really enjoying it. It's one of those things where, you know, Joe, every so often you kind of get irritated with comics and you fall out of love with them for a while. And this is rekindling that deep love I have of comics and comic book history.
It's not Hillary Clinton's book, Hard Choices?
No.
Okay.
Two new books that Marvel has started up I really like.
And one of them first, not Hillary Clinton's book, Hard Choices. Although that would be funny as a comic.
Would she fit into the Marvel Universe? Maybe she killed the Watcher.
Well, they were already in the DC Universe, so they're probably copyright DC.
All I know is that Dan Jurgens, who was drawing Superman when Superman died,
mm-hmm.
not a big fan of Bill Clinton,
mm-hmm.
went out of his way to make sure that Bill Clinton endorsed the, there were four Superman replacements.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Jurgens made sure that he endorsed the one that turned out to be a villain.
Ah, good man that, Dan.
So, two new books from Marvel. First one is Chris Claremont's Nightcrawler series. I don't know if I've talked about it before, but Chris Claremont, he could be very good, and he could be not so good. This is good. He used the first issue to kind of reset the status quo after Nightcrawler came back from the dead, set him up with supporting characters that tie in with his past, but he's forgetting the stupid shit about Nightcrawler's past. And it's not huge, big blocks
of
text.
You've been ranting on Facebook all about how brilliant The Crossing was with teenage Tony Stark. What stupid stuff of Nightcrawler would you drop? Or did he?
Him being a priest.
Okay.
Him being blackmailed. Him being brainwashed into killing the Pope. His father being the demon Belasco, or his father being Mystique.
Ah.
Those were both there. Him no longer being happy-go-lucky, but whining about his appearance. Because one of the things I liked about Nightcrawler was he was happy to look the way he did. Whereas all the other Marvel characters who don't look human bellyache about it all the time. He was more, I'm happy with me. And Claremont's got a good, strong story that doesn't... One of the things I like about Claremont is he does very good characterization. You read the book, you know the character, they're fully realized. One of the things I don't like is he starts throwing in shit tons of subplots that he never pays off. He's not doing that here. Probably because he has an editor who says, nope, we tell one story at a time now. The second book that I picked up that I surprised me how much I liked it was Cyclops, which is written by Greg Rucka, one of my favorite authors.
I'll second that.
And I picked it up going, I'm not really interested in Cyclops. I don't think he could carry a solo story. But it's Greg Rucka, and I love Greg Rucka. I read that first issue. I'm in. It's the teenage Cyclops out in space with his dad as a space pirate.
And his mom, half cat, half skunk.
Well, stepmom. It's fun.
It is.
It's interesting.
So far.
And it's a
nice spin.
It's something Marvel hasn't done in a long time, in that it's just it's a space pirate adventure. It's a space comic. It's a cosmic comic without there being the fate of the universe, without all the weight.
Although that will be back home, because in the regular X-Men comics, the fact that the teenage Cyclops is gone does have some effect on those who were left behind.
Yeah.
So it ties in.
So one of the things that when I look at Marvel's upcoming stuff and then I look at the sales figures and do all that number stuff in my head that I always do, even though I shouldn't, is, there are too many X-Men books. They're going to have to call the herd. But I hope this one lasts. The next comic that I picked up and read and enjoyed, I actually read it a little earlier today, The Thanos Annual Number 1 by Jim Starlin.
I read that too.
Ooh, Starlin is... You know how I said I like Cyclops because it doesn't have the big cosmic weight?
Yeah.
Thanos is the opposite. It is nothing but cosmic weight. Starlin is planning something big here.
And he's got his graphic novel coming up.
Yep, there's a Thanos graphic novel coming up. There was a lot of pissing and moaning among fans, and even Starlin a little bit, that he was told that in his next project he couldn't use Warlock. They've smoothed that out. Starlin has gone on Facebook and Twitter and interviews and said he is very happy with Marvel right now, probably because they dropped him a check for Thanos, but no one can say that. But he says he's very happy with Marvel right now. He's very happy to be working there, and he is working on something big. There was a two-issue prestige series back in like the late 80s. Thanos Quest.
And we talked a bit about it. It was just a overpriced series that came out because Thanos trapped the Silver Surfer on a planet where he was depowered. He went off on a quest, which was for the gems that the Elders of the Universe had. And at the end of it, he got them all, put them in this gauntlet, which we'd never heard of before, suddenly became the most powerful being in the universe.
And it was done kind of to the side.
And nobody, I remember pointing it out to people saying, you read Silver Surfer? Yeah. You probably want to buy this. No, I don't. It's $2.99 or whatever the price was. $3.99, whatever. And then, of course, the shit hit the fan in Silver Surfer when Thanos showed up, handed Silver Surfer's ass, he ran to Earth to alert the villains, and that started the Infinity Gauntlet. And then all of a sudden, everybody was back. How did he get this? What happened? Remember the Thanos quest? Yeah! Well, can I get a copy? They're like $20 back issues now, because nobody bought them.
I got a feeling the same thing is going to happen with this Thanos issue. There is a rumor floating. Rumor! Not fact,
I'm listening.
Rumor that this could be used as a soft Marvel reboot.
Ooh.
And if you read the story, you can actually see, oh, yeah. Oh, they could. Now, one of the editors at Marvel said, why would we start something like that in an annual set in the past for a character who doesn't even have his own series? Joe, do you remember where the whole Infinite Crisis 52 started? in the Adam Strange Planet Heist miniseries.
Yep, yep.
When they start these events, they usually kind of, you know, they drop a hint here and they drop a hint here and they drop a hint here and they drop a hint here. I would be very happy if, let's say, in 2016, Jim Starlin is the one who's doing the big Marvel event, and they don't need to do a massive reboot, but they could mess with things.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the last thing I'm fix all on. This time mess up that Avengers and X-Men and everybody seems to be wallowing in.
Yeah. The last thing I am geeking on, I went to the library and picked up the Max Allan Collins book, Seduction of the Innocent. It's another novel in the Hard Case Crime series. It is set in the 50s in the comic book industry. It's a murder mystery set in the 50s in the comic book industry. And no, he doesn't use Bill Gaines and Al Feldstein and Jack Kirby and Al Capp and Frank Frazetta and Dr. Frederick Wortham's names. He changes them a little bit. He fictionalizes it. But I am having so much fun reading this book. The historical stuff he's putting in is very accurate. The character interaction stuff isn't, you know, you got to tell a story. But if you at all know about the creation of the Comics Code and all that, you should pick up this book. You'll probably read it in an afternoon. It's a lot of fun. It's well written. And it has very EC-like things drawn for each chapter by our pal Terry Beatty.
Cool.
And it's only $9.99. So when I'm done reading it at the library, I'll probably go pick up a copy next time I'm at Uncle Edgar or Once Upon a Mystery. And that's what I'm geeking on.
And you know what? I am shocked. Shocked, I tell you. You did not tell me about Pearls Before Swine.
I got to have something for next week.
Yeah, but it happened last week.
Yeah, but I just read about it today.
And I just read them today. And by the time we post this, it'll be 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
All right. Folks, you're going to have to travel back in time. Go to, I don't know, what's a good website? GoComics.com.
Actually, you could go almost anywhere because there are tons of interviews floating out there around this.
The week between June 2nd and June 6th. Well, if you know the name Bill Watterson, or if you remember Calvin and Hobbes, Bill returned to comics as guest artist for Pearls Before Swine, and I believe did it in a stealthy manner. So nobody knew about it until it was over. And even, I follow Tony Isabella a lot on Facebook, and even he didn't. I don't think he knew about it because he just posted, hey, comics in comics. And now he said, holy cow, Bill Watterson's in comics. So check it out. It was a lot of fun just to go back. And I think it was absolutely brilliant. Pearls Before Swine is a hilarious strip anyways by Stephen Passis. I'm terrible with name pronunciation, right? Kiri Strode.
Yes.
So check it out.
Strati.
Here's your chance. You have homework. So check this out. Pearls Before Swine. You like it. You love it.
Well, believe it or not, kids, you've wasted an hour and a half of your life listening to us blather on about funny books.
Yeah.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most, Joe.
Because of the rush production schedule, only one Ectomobile was fully converted. That was an Ecto-1 1959 Cadillac Miller Meteor Ambulance. It was still in a poor state of repair. It died at the end of the shot filmed in Ghostbusters 2 as it was driving on the Brooklyn Bridge. Somebody hit my music. Call my mama. I feel like dancing.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, yo. Can somebody call my